All right. You guys know who it is. It's Yaya coming at you with a brand new episode of the Real Chalk Podcast. You guys are tuned in to the Shruck Collective, and OPEX month this month continues on the Real Chalk Podcast. Ryan and I flew up to Phoenix, Arizona, went to OPEX headquarters. You guys already got Marcus Philly 2 weeks ago, and then we had Mike Lee, Director of Coaching over at OPEX last week. And this week, we're going to come out with a bang. James Fitzgerald, the man, the myth, the legend. I am guessing most of you guys, especially if you're listening to this podcast, already know who James Fitz is, even though hopefully you'll know him a little bit more after this podcast episode is over. As always, Ryan and I try to ask just a couple different questions, a little different approach than most podcasts out there, to maybe get some stuff out of James that you guys have never heard before. Whole podcast is awesome. The entire time we just kind of get the feeling that James just knows something about the world and the universe and how everything works that you don't and you might most probably never will. We go all the way from how he found himself after an injury as a young man and then went into learning more about fitness and then trying to give the gift of fitness to other people, all the way to how he believes that nowadays the current system of fitness is just flawed. He calls it the unsustainable fast track model. It's the reason why people always jumping into the next best thing and always looking for the magic pill and this 30-day challenge and this will make you skinny in 60 days and all that fucking nonsense. And James actually has a great take on this and how to change this going forward. We also dive into more stuff like his take on drugs, psychedelics, weed, steroids, why he hates the word biohacking. He actually got really mad at me for that one, for using that, and I got terrified. So all that in this episode coming up. Also, guys, if you guys are following Fish and I on our Instagrams or just the CrossFit Chalk Instagram, you've probably seen us wear those super dope new weight vests from Unbroken Design. We have a camo one and we have the American flag one. These are honestly so comfortable to wear, as they're not just one big plate, but they have the little bean bags or sandbags that you put in. So that way it's way closer to your body and you just feel more aerodynamic as you're working out, which lets you fitness faster. They don't just make weight vests though. Unbroken Designs makes everything. The brand started out geared towards women, but now there's plenty in there for men as well. The weighted vest, as I said, and then they got knee sleeve, belt, wrist wraps, singlets, shorts, this, that, everything that your CrossFit or just fitness heart could possibly desire. Their products were developed by athletes and tested by world-class athletes, including Fish and I. I'm going to put myself in that category. Got CrossFit Games finals competitor, Olympic weightlifters, powerlifting record holders, bodybuilders, bikini competitors, fitness competitors. As you can see, people like this stuff. So there's a pretty good chance that you might also like it. This is top of the line stuff. Go ahead and head over to their website at Unbroken Designs. You guys are going to get 10% off everything on the site, everything that your heart desires. Just use the code SHRUGGED10 as you're checking out. Once again, that code is SHRUGGED10. They will ship all over the world, and they also actually have physical brick and mortar stores in Canada, France, Germany, UK, Italy, and Spain. So not only shipping, but also you guys can actually walk into these stores and check it out. Head over to unbrokendesigns.com, hammer in that code SHRUGGED10, and enjoy your new gear.
Yeah, we'll hit him up a little bit, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, you have some great answers for you.
All right, cool. Yeah. We're good to go?
Yeah, let's do it.
All righty, guys. Yaya here coming at you. We're sitting down with Fish. We're in Phoenix at OPEX headquarters, sitting down with the man, the myth, the legend himself. OPT, Jay Fitz, James Fitzgerald, whichever one you guys might know him as. I'm super excited for this just to geek out on a couple of things. I know you've probably done a bunch of podcasts. Hopefully, we always try to make this one just a little bit different. So
yeah, cool.
We'll start as broad as possible and then hopefully we'll ask you some questions that you've maybe never been asked before.
Yeah, I look forward to that.
Maybe not on air. So
yeah, true.
So we'll see. But I'll give you a chance to introduce yourself for those listeners that maybe don't know who you are, and then we'll just take it from there.
Yeah. Well, I'm the founder of OPEX. I was a young athlete, had an injury, and then realized that I didn't have an athlete identity anymore, and kind of lost myself and figured out who I was really through finding fitness again, or realizing that fitness was a real big base support for all the athletic, you know, endeavors that I was partaking in. And from that, I just wanted to learn so much about it. You know, I just recognized that fitness is such a big part. That the first access was like, well, you got to go to school to to dig into it a little bit more. So, yeah, I learned about it, about fitness, the broad concept in school, and then came out and wanted to deliver it to other people. And the only thing that you did at the time was to be a coach or personal trainer. You know, and you had a, there was a place, you know, fit, you know, it was accessible, and everyone was doing it, and the coach meant something then.
Yeah, totally.
You know,
yeah.
And I just built that. I just fucking did it nonstop. I loved it so much. Loved it, you know, giving out to people. At the same time, I liked experiencing all different kinds of things too. Right. So I was a fitness junkie. I still am, experimenting with all different kinds of things. You know, different kinds of weights and different kinds of programming and body composition changes, nutritional stuff. Like back in the day, in the 90s, was very experimental because this whole new version of delivery of fitness was just the cusp, you know?
Yeah.
It's all old Russian transcripts and stuff that everybody's trying to read. Dvorsky and all that stuff is like all the biggest stuff at the time. I remember because I went to exercise physiology at University of Utah. And that was like what all my coaches geeked out on, because I was on the Olympic weightlifting team, and he would always talk about all these Russian things and all these Bulgarian concepts and all these things, and I'm reading them and I'm like, oh my god, like how could anyone handle these like loads of volume?
Yeah.
Granted, they all failed their drug tests, but
yeah, yeah.
But going on from there's
your answer.
Yeah, there was people that read into that really well and could extract the principles inside of it that were really helpful.
It was interesting though, because I was in Utah and I was working at this gym, and I remember seeing this guy. And for 5 years, I trained on the Olympic bobsled team. That's what I did. That's why I lived in Utah and I went to school there. I was on an Olympic scholarship in this gym that I worked in for a college job, because the Olympics didn't really give us anything.
Yeah.
For US. this guy was always doing these weird pull ups, and he was always asking me to do this workout, 21-15-9 thrusters and pull-ups, and he was like super passionate about it, and everything he did just looked so strange to me. And this is Chris Spieler, and it's 2007. This is like when you won, and he shows me a video. He's like, I went to this thing over the weekend. It's called the CrossFit Games. You got to check it out. And I see it, and I'm like, you guys are working out in the dirt. Like, I really don't know what you're doing, you know. And then I remember, and I was like, well, this guy seems pretty badass, but this guy won. And for those of you who can't see me, I'm pointing to James here. And I remember looking online, and I was like, oh, this guy, now he's opened his own gym, and he's doing, like, testing and stuff, and he's, like, geeking out on it, and it's really, really interesting. And I think you were the only person at that time to do that. And I think it drew a lot of eyes at you. A lot of people were like, oh, wow, he's looking at it in, like, a different light. He's trying to create his own thing. And I feel like whenever I think of functional fitness, you're absolutely the first person that comes to mind for me. Whether it's, you know, people who do Olympic lifting, maybe some of those older Bulgarian and Russian magazines come to light in their mind. But for me, when it comes to functional fitness, I think of James Fitzgerald every single time.
Yeah, that's cool. Because I think it was that crossroads of finishing academia and then having some experience, and then you get the, you know, the thruster pull-up experience.
Mm-hmm.
And
which
I
was
think
awful.
Yeah.
That was my first workout.
Yeah, because I was pretty much indirectly vilified and persecuted in the strength conditioning industry because of my choices of experimenting with this new version of fitness.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't really care because I had successful business anyways and I was applying it to my clients.
Yeah.
But when I first saw it and did it, I knew there was something inside of it that could be extracted, like the manuals, right?
Well,
that I think was powerful. Yeah, I mean, seriously.
It's really what you're doing now is a version of that.
Yeah, I mean, just extracting the pieces from it that are very effective for improvements in fitness, right? And so I think that intersection of discovering it was obviously, you know, a very important one. And I'm glad I stuck my head in it. You know, I have no regrets on that. Because I was presenting nationally and internationally on, like, core conditioning, and at the time, spinal stability was a real big thing, you know, and core training and strength conditioning models. And then the request stopped, you know, because they saw I was advancing this new version of, like, investigating fitness and mixed modal training. And
they thought it was crap.
They thought it was crap, which is kind of sad. Yeah. But you can understand why, right? Mm-hmm. Which was kind of sad. You know,
it hurts.
If we had all take it on. Yeah, I mean, it's hard work. Yeah. But also, too, remember that side of fitness was berating the other old version of fitness, mm-hmm. right? So I can understand it. But like anything, you know, if it's probably uncomfortable, it's probably worthwhile digging your teeth into. And I found a love with it, like we all did, right?
That
whatever's on .com, you wake up and you hit it and you learn so much shit. But I was applying it to clients since 2004 at the same time as I was, like, practicing it. And I think that's what, you know, draw, I guess, the coach's eye, like what you saw, mm-hmm. right? Is like, okay, there is a possibly different way to, like, circumvent how it's being presented, you know? And I just enjoyed that. And I think it's a struggle. So I'll finish my story. So that you know, grew that up to some great businesses in Calgary. I started doing online coaching because of my experience and success in CrossFit. And then I started to create an educational system because so many coaches were trying to ask the questions like, well, how do you keep this thing rolling and why are you successful? And so I just developed what I thought were five big pillars of what would make a coach really professional. And that's called our CCP education today.
Everybody I know who's taken that is like a different person completely.
Yeah, which that's great. Thank you. That means a lot because that's basically what I created it for.
Like when I first started training, like competitively, to want to go to the games, like my coach was Brian Borstein, who did a lot of your stuff.
Yeah. So again, that means that he was able to now extract some of those principles, right? Because the CCP is not the way, but it is principle based. Mm-hmm. So a coach can come in there and just pull things out and then help another person, and that's really effective.
Yeah.
So that's what brings us to today. You know, we're, you know, big education company for fitness, and we coach people in gyms. We have gyms that coach that. So that's what, to bring the story up to who I am.
Perfect. And for you, what you do mostly is the coaching the coaches, right? So taking the coaches to the next level.
Yeah. CCP is online or live. Mm-hmm. And so just think of it as the education is in an online portal where a group of people get in there, and I'm their coach as they go through our education. So they get to watch online education, but throughout the time they may see me in person or they get to see me live in an online version that I get to help them, you know, level up their education in those specific components of the course. And then we have athletes on site that I get to keep my hands fresh with as well.
Cool. Yeah, we just saw that.
Yeah.
And then obviously you not asking you to give everything away, like the five pillars and like everything you do in the classroom, but like what if I came in as a coach, what are those fundamentals that you kind of walk me through?
Yeah, well, I'll back up and say that it took, you know, some experience in what I consider to be successful for a fitness coach, with the premise being that I think a fitness coach needs viability as a professional long term. Mm-hmm. So we know when people would ask the question, well, what do you think of the big things? And the big things were you had to be able to develop a relationship with people.
Yeah.
And that doesn't become couch psychological stuff. You know, it's basically like how do you resonate with a human, you know? And that's called consulting. That's one of our biggest pillars of our course, right, on consulting and how to sit down and, like, take some time to figure out someone's why.
Yeah.
And when that is missed, I think fundamentally it's the biggest issue within fitness today in the delivery. Is that no one's having a conversation and no one's really trying to get to the bottom of really why they're doing what they're doing.
Absolutely.
It's turned into like a medical system where it's like, I got 15 minutes, we got this on-ramp program, just get in and let's get it going and it'll take care of everything. But you forgot to ask, like, well, why are you really here?
Yeah.
It may still benefit you, but that why you're really here will come back to haunt you in a couple of years if it's not taken care of. So consulting is big. Obviously, physical assessment, you know, what are really simple basics of, like, how to get someone up and going and where do they start. Program design, which is my niche. That's what I like to get into because I love painting pictures. So
that's my
big one, right? Nourishment, which is basically how to take care of people with basic lifestyle guidelines, which includes nutrition and rhythm and consistency and things like that.
Yeah.
And business and how to wrap a business around that. And that business portion was really directed at principle-based in the beginning, and now you would look at our education system and see that it's directly influencing a coach to, you know, how to set them up for success so that when they finish the education, they can go out there and at least make an attempt of becoming a good coach, you know.
Yeah.
Or a successful coach, I should say.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Mm-hmm. So business, nutrition, assessment, program design, consulting.
Yeah.
So what were like some of the first steps that took you into like really dissecting athletes, and like what were those first steps? So like, I know like your big thing is energy systems. So like, let's say, you know, you win the CrossFit Games, you start seeing that this sport is growing and there's athletes are, you know, they're really good in one area, not so good in another area. Like, how do you figure out scientifically to be like, okay, this is what I need to do to your body to make this adaptation so that you can become this good?
Yeah.
Like, how, like, what is the thought process behind that?
Yeah, I'm not sure if I'll be able to explain the thought process, but.
I know that's really hard, but maybe like.
No, but we'll tease it out. You know, and if it's not clear, then be sure to ask me something a little bit more in depth on it if I'm not getting to it. But I do want to clarify that I'm specifically known in strength conditioning for energy system training. Not that I don't enjoy being in that area, but it's because I asked that fundamental question when CrossFit started of, like, what is work and how do you improve someone who's not just extremely talented? And I think that plus, you know, being in a lab, you know, because I did some scientific research and I know research methods and I was, you know, in exercise physiology, you can't escape that style of thinking. So back to your point on how to formulate a plan to help people, especially within conditioning or a metabolic environment, and how to, you know, get people to higher levels, you go back to basic principles of physiology as a starting point. Now, that doesn't mean that those are correct, because I have since, I guess you could say my academic years, changed my own into my own version of what fatigue is. Now, that goes against, you know, what, you know, Tim Noakes' method or a peripheral method of fatigue's concepts would be. But that's all under the premise that people get tired on a treadmill and we dictate energy based upon how they get tired on a treadmill. With a metabolic cart or exchanges of, you know, O2, CO2, et cetera. And that's what we've used at as our academic model of, like, well, that's what fatigue is. This happens and you see these things occur. Well, what happens if that's not the model of fatigue that's used in the lab? Meaning, how can you turn power clean ring dips and running around a building in an incremental state? Are you still with me?
Mm-hmm. Yep,
so imagine if you did that in an incremental state,
mm-hmm.
right? So this is what blew my mind up. Right? Because then why I probably look like I'm really heavily interested in energy system training, because there's so much shit we can dig our teeth into that will fundamentally change our whole concept of what makes people tired. And that's what I believe is, you know, the starting point. How do you dictate, you know, how you move people forward in the overall, you know, fitness world, which is a broad case? You have to figure out their limitations.
So are you testing?
And those, like, limitations go into blocks, right? So there's different kinds of limitations that prevent people from, you know, raising up. And you use that plus, you know, what we call principles of maximal physical potential, training age, mm-hmm. you know, anthropometrics, et cetera. And that should just give you somewhat of a concept as to how you help individuals. Notwithstanding, you got to look at the sport and say, well, what's actually required? And then you work your way backwards to see what kind of things you need to work on to get them over to that spot. I wonder if that helped. I hope that helped.
I was saying, like,
is,
like, during that time of, like, someone doing, like, an incremental workout like that, like, are you taking, like, what kind of samples are you taking to figure out what's really going on inside of them?
Yeah, well, I wasn't mentioning it to say that we're testing those exact things. The reason why I mentioned it is to make people understand that there's a million possibilities of trying to figure out incremental fatigue and what is fatigue.
What
right?
actually makes
just
you
look at the six look at the six events at the regionals, right? So those may never be done again.
Yeah.
And so why would you want to test how people do in them if the dose response of all of them for every person is different? Do you see how that just becomes like, well, how the fuck do you determine what happens in a fatigue mechanism in mixed modal training, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's almost impossible. It is impossible. Right. I'll give you an example. So we've tested, and this will answer your question a little bit. We've tested kettlebell swing, burpee, and rowing, and multiple methods of it, with thermoregulation, posture changes, lactate, heart rate. With the Zephyr bioharness, and, you know, some other things, and we try to port them on as well as a MOXIE unit just to determine saturation of O2, et cetera, et cetera.
This is the stuff I'm talking about.
But we picked those three. Because anyone could do them, mm-hmm. and it was honestly, to be honest, is that it's easy to set up for a lab setting, right? It's not complex. They're not running out of the building and doing all this kind of shit that you can't actually watch, right?
Or they have to do an overhead squat and they can't just do it because of their shoulder and not actually because they're tired.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, so I looked at those three things in the lab, as et cetera, as well as, you know, a bunch of other pieces. But that would be the first, you know, true mixed modal testing. And we saw some really interesting variations in people, right? Which you would expect is like, well, everyone gets a variation. But underneath the context of physiology, you're not supposed to get that variation. Does that make sense? Like, he's like, you just do this, and you do this work, and this is what you'll see on the graph, and you take everything from that, and you just put it in the training. It's all submaximal, and it'll work its way. It's like, no, that's not the case.
Yeah.
So for some person, they had, you know, changes in heart rate that were different than the other. For some person, they have a higher absolute score of lactate than the next person. For, you know what I mean? So the you know, two things there to take from that is, number one, it's almost impossible to effectively recognize what the dose response is in mixed modal training. Right, so we got to own that. Just be like, well, fuck, I don't know what's going on. Everything's going on,
yeah.
Right? then it's very hard to take percentages of that and say, well, if that's what we got in that test, this is what you need to do in training, right?
Yeah.
It's mind blowing to try to get inside to try to figure it out. But what keeps me at peace is principles, and so that's why what I teach work and rest scenarios, interval method, and pace method, because I believe the truth is in training. And that's what helps people dictate what they're doing and if they're doing what they perceive to be as a dose response, right? And this today is falling, you know, uncomfortable in people's, you know, styles because I'm pushing sustainability and I'm pushing sustainability of dynamic contractions. Yet the other side wants to push unsustainable methods.
Yeah.
Right?
Death.
Yeah.
And I know why the push is for the unsustainable methods.
Yeah.
And I know why I push sustainable methods.
And
I can see
that?
How that feels. Yeah, for sure.
Especially the other side, because that's what happens.
And it's
in
not
most
and it's not one system,
world.
It's culture, right?
Yeah.
This is deep, but fitness is pop culture now. So fitness has been completely disrespected. Mm-hmm. And with the advancement in technology and information, people think that they can get fitness like they can get an answer on Google. Now that sounds fucking retarded, right? But people actually think this,
yeah.
Right? It's in a genetic code now, you know? So try to extract that from a four-year-old whose parent has believed that for 30 years. It's
right.
Fucking impossible,
I talked
right?
to someone recently who literally told me, I told my own gym, and he's like, I heard you can get in shape in just like a couple days.
I was like, so the entire system, including academia, is based on this idea now that, humans are supposed to be adapting faster than others. Why we're here is to try to figure out how to get shit done quicker. You know, we're praising celebrities and biohack models, right? We're praising this, right? Yet we forget that people can't improve, right? Fundamentally, it's going to last for a really long period of time if they don't put the time in,
yep.
Right? So see where that meets. And that's called the unsustainable fast-track model. And that model is fucking robust. It's robust because marketing, advertising, you know, that's much
social
stronger
media,
than education.
Everything.
That's
yeah.
much stronger than education, mm-hmm. right? Much stronger than education. And the entire fitness system has backed that, right, through great marketing to get people in, right?
Yep.
Because we're promising the fast fix just to get them in our door.
And that's what makes money.
And we're even backing it up with white paper evidence of some bullshit 20-second on, 10-sec off protocol that gets you fitness in a couple of weeks. And we've just been
30 days.
You know, and now we're trying to come up with research that'll be a 1-minute protocol, you know, where these academia folks are pushing this idea on a broad sense of fitness, you know. So that's the big intersection. I call it the fast track model. It's really, you know, people believing in intensity and unsustainability. Yet my question would be, what's the fucking hurry?
Yeah. I like that. Do you think then that what it comes down to, because Fish and I are sitting here and the more I learn about fitness and the more I get into just fitness in general, not even CrossFit, I naturally, even before I knew who you were or what you guys do here, started gravitating towards a system that is more like yours, more sustainable, more like, okay, how can I go into the gym 5 days a week and walk out and still feel good enough to go on about my day, where almost the gym is like an energy booster, and I like, now I feel better, now I can go, instead of, oh my God, I'm so beat up, I gotta go home and take a nap and just stay home and I don't want to do anything for the rest of the day.
Mm-hmm.
do you think that just comes with education and with experience? Is it because these people are just people that are gravitating towards the, here is a 30-day program to get you shredded just in time for summer? Is it just that they don't know any better, and it's just because the marketing and everything
is out
there?
Yeah, it's too strong, you know?
Yeah.
You'll sit down with someone for 90 minutes and explain that to them, and then when they leave, they'll get 35 different iterations of why your shit is questionable.
Yeah. 100%.
Yeah, with very strong evidence.
It's sad.
With very strong evidence.
Yeah.
Of course. You know, and I'll give you one little example of that. Like, if we were to put like 100 people in an unsustainable model and 100 people in a sustainable model and all regular similar humans together in a fitness program, within the first year, you will get better, quote unquote, results of fitness
in the unsustainable
model.
For sure.
Right?
Yeah.
So who the fuck cares about a 20-year program?
Yeah.
Right? And no one, who gives a shit about that? No one's going to put money into it. No one's going to, you know, consider it. So all you get is a 1 to 2 year peak, and then all these people just get churned into the system, the biohack system, for the rest of their life, or they get spit to the curb and disease happens and sickness occurs.
Absolutely.
And now there's now we know there's a fucking robust system to help those folks.
Oh yeah.
The big pharma, medical mafia.
Yeah, exactly. And I thought it was super cool what you said before we started recording, when Fish asked you, like, are you still training for the 800 meters? And you're like, no, I don't do it anymore. And then he was like, well, what are you training for now? And you said, well, just standing upright when I'm 90 years old.
And hiking at
95. I think that's such a cool way to look at life. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Where, like,
I don't think I'm going to get to 95, but it's a good goal. I'll be honest.
Always got to shoot for the stars.
Yeah, man.
For sure.
Yeah.
I was actually going to ask you this question then later on, but I think this is perfect timing right now. Where do you see, and I mean, we were talking about how CrossFit kind of came in and people were pushing against that. Now you got these two models kind of fighting against each other. Where do you see the fitness world when you look at it? Where do you see it going over the next 5, 10, 15 years? Do you see a swing at all towards the sustainable model?
Well, the downside of, as I said, the information age and technology was that everyone's an expert and this is exactly how you get this shit quickly. The positive side of that is, I believe anyways, with the advancement in technology, human measurement will get to a really scaled, less expensive, high degree. And so I think within, let's call it 10 years or 15 years, we're going to have everything we need in terms of self-measurement on our phone or on a hologram that'll give us indication from our sweat or heart rate variability or something we wake up in the morning time that'll tell you, like, you probably shouldn't have done that yesterday.
Yeah.
So we're going to have a lot better measurement, you know, after we eat a meal, A1C scores over 4 weeks, right? It'll just be a constant, like, little signal for the individual, or blood sugar throughout the day. Or it'll just be like, beep, you know, $5 app made by Apple, by the way.
Yeah.
Apple is committing a huge amount of money into this, so you can guarantee that over time it's going to run through their system.
Okay.
And, you know, everyone's on board with that. Biotech is the biggest, you know, investment source over the past 5 years. You look into where money is going, and everyone is interested in customization and personalization of what humans are doing, right?
Absolutely.
You can see the push on things we see in the front end of the market, right? Of like
the
DNA shit, HRV
wearables.
Testing, wearables. Like that's all feelers, right? There's, companies that will be unnamed are doing stuff. They did that shit 5 years ago. Of stuff, of human measurement stuff that would just blow your fucking mind. But it just can't go to market due to testing and expense and the shit that the scores they get with it. But it'll be unfolded in the future.
That's really cool, man. I hope that that's true.
But back to your point, where will the future be? Well, you're kind of going to know what's going on all the time, right? You're going to have a pretty easy way of determining what's going on with your cells, you know, hydration, et cetera. And then if you could just get beat over the head with this loose idea of fitness that you're doing, right, it's pretty much going to tell you all the time. It's like, you probably need to rethink that because I'm calibrating your age every day and you're not living as long.
Something isn't right.
Yeah.
100%. I think that's really cool. I hope that. I know I wear the Whoop and I know a couple athletes here do as well.
So that's just a feeler.
And it's a feeler.
Right,
just that already changed a lot for
me.
You know, just waking up in the morning and getting that recovery score and, you know, I had a couple of beers last night, and then you wake up, and all of a sudden you're in the red, and you're like, oh, okay, so it does actually have an impact.
So the downside of that is that no one really knows what to do with the data.
Right.
Right. But the good side of, back to your point, is that I think there'll be a spot for a fitness coach or a health and fitness coach in the future, because that consumer is going to need to have some knowledge on what they should do with their scores.
Yeah.
That makes sense? So 100%. You're going to have to consult with someone who's a fitness coach, who's a leader in society, who's more respected than a number of other professions.
Yeah.
Because it dictates what they need to do day to day to live long and prosper. And it won't be a default method.
I love that. Yeah.
I think we're right in the middle of the
I could be biased, you know, because I'm a fitness coach and I know the power of it. But I think you guys know the power of it, too. We have tools in our pockets that can transform, you know, a lot of things, right?
Definitely.
Yeah, and it's just using them correctly.
That's right.
And I think it's cool, too, that you actually decided to make a business out of this model that's actually not preferable when it comes to, like, media and marketing. And, like, it's way easier to build something that is a 30-day plan and you're giving out an ebook and marketing on Instagram.
Yeah, whereas there's challenges with that.
Building something like this. So what made you want to do this over just everything else?
I think it just was the coaching. You know, I really feel that, you know, the brand and how my medium is through the brand, that we want to make a big impact on fitness, you know. Mm-hmm. And timing is everything, you know. So I started in the mid-90s and, you know, it's now 25 years later. So I got to see things, right? And when you get to see things, you just start to change your priorities, you know. So I don't want to say that, like, at 17, I just knew, you know, these are things I want to do. It's like you just see the change of your profession and the change in fitness as a culture, and it just gets really disappointing. And so instead of complaining, I just fucking said, you know, we can do something about it. So how do you do? What do you do? Just, like, give coaches principles that they can go out there and, like, make a big impact. And now we're at the point where we're creating businesses so that they actually can do it brick and mortar and make it work.
That's really cool.
I was going to say the unsustainable model of, like, what CrossFit is and what, like, cross training is or whatever you want to call it. I feel like everyone who's been doing that for, I would say, like, maybe 5 years, they're already getting fit into that other cycle. Mm-hmm. And they're all looking for basically what you're doing or, like, that interval weight training model, basically. Mm-hmm. I think IWTs are coming back, like, big time. Mm-hmm. A lot of people are getting into, like, the bodybuilding stuff and trying
to go full circle, right?
Yeah. So I think, like, right now you're, like, smack and, like, the best time for, like, what you preach right now. I think it's a great time. I think a lot of people are going to be going into this route.
Yeah, I kind of knew from the original, like, looking at the people that won in the sport or that I saw progressing, not even champions, but just people that were, like, on the street, just clients of mine, you know, and saw them, like, actually doing well within the unsustainable model. They had this big base of support of bodybuilding, you know. And so when that question came out way back, which is now 12 years, it seems like 50 years ago, of, like, well, what's going to make people really good at this? My comment was bodybuilding, but what I really meant was, you know, lots of contractions, you know, that are not at a fatigue rate. And those people who did that, which is basically pure strength conditioning models, like you're talking about IWT and bodybuilding or functional bodybuilding, you know, people are searching for that now for two reasons. Number one, they got spit out after a couple of years and didn't see progress, so they got to go back to the basics. And number two, they're starting to recognize that they want to climb this massive peak in potential. They better have a robust base support head to toe. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't happen through doing burpees and fast barbell stuff.
Yeah, exactly. And the functional bodybuilding is something that you guys have been preaching now for some time too. And actually, I started doing it on the last cycle that you guys started. And I absolutely love it because, one, it takes intensity out of it a little bit. And it just allows you to be, like, more connected to the movement as well.
Yeah.
Whereas,
who doesn't like the pump?
Yeah, exactly. The pump feels great. So where do you see one of the things that I'm doing it with a couple of buddies of mine, and one of the things that Dave asked me is, how do you see that the functional bodybuilding base? So I'm doing this. And then last week, I've been doing this for, like, 6-7 weeks now, however long it's been going on. Mm-hmm. Last week, Saturday, because it was my buddy's birthday, I jumped into the Saturday class, which is, like, a partner workout, and did, like, a real, like, quad type of workout, and I'm not gonna lie, it wasn't fun. It wasn't great coming from super slow contractions and just like doing that with the, I mean, you guys have the little, like, Metcon stuff at the end. How do you see that transition going? So, like, once I'm done with the functional bodybuilding and I'm transitioning back into CrossFit, what should I do and what are some areas that I need to pay attention to?
First, I want to clarify that Mike Lee and Marcus Philly probably would be able to speak on a deeper degree of this. It's basically their invention of their programming that led to popularity of it. I don't have anything to do with the systems or development of it.
Okay.
That was one of the biggest questions I had when I first saw the experience of it, was because I think those kinds of contractions, you know, in functional bodybuilding are years away from the metabolic contractions that occur, of dynamic contractions at a sustainable rate.
Yeah.
not like a couple of weeks away, years away.
Right.
So to take, I'll just go back to principle, to take slower contractions, just think of it as like a hamstring curl, right? Mm-hmm. Anyone who's done bodybuilding knows what 6 really challenging hamstring curls feel like on your hamstrings, right?
Yeah.
But within our sport, we have to turn those into an aerobic mechanism. Now, that sounds fucked up, but if you don't, you die out sooner than the next person.
You just blow
so
up.
So there's 2 things that have to happen. You either need to dampen your CNS so you don't get that effect with each contraction, or you need to figure out how to maintain those contractions with a phosphate recovery or whatever the fuck you need to do, which is why more lower NME or more endurance-esque individuals in the sport of fitness survive.
Yeah.
Because explosive people just die or burn a quick death over time.
Yep.
Because they can't actually dampen the contraction. So to move from slow contractions, not just to faster contractions, there's like 8 steps in between of doing that, okay? And you move those slow contractions to the point where all the dynamic ones are not just performed, but they're performed at a sustainable rate.
Right.
Right? Because mm-hmm. everyone thinks, oh, you can do pull-ups, you can enter. No, you got to do pull-ups that are sustainable. Now you get to enter. So you went from like slow contractions right to here,
yeah.
which you deserve to get punched in the face, right? Fair enough. But it's a good experience.
Totally, yeah.
It's a good experience.
Yeah. And we're going to have Marcus on. We're actually going up there next week. So
mm-hmm. Okay, great.
Then I'll
we'll ask him that one because he may have a different opinion sure. on it. But my belief, there's a long time.
You mentioned the biohacking stuff now a couple times too. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people that we have on the podcast are super into that. And mm-hmm. to be honest with you, I thought a couple of things that they have mentioned are really cool. So are you completely opposed to the whole like biohacking lifestyle?
Well, I'm being,
or is it just
– Well, I'm being broad on that. So if you wanted to create context to each area, you know, we can – you know, have a discussion on it.
Absolutely. So I'm more talking about, one of the things that I really like doing is, where do I start with this? Okay, so kind of like the routine stuff. So I like the routine, like morning routine, nighttime routine, kind of the hacks to like get your life, your day going, and then wind down at the end of the day. So just
that's
like.
That's not a hack. That's been when the sun and the moon has been here for a lot longer than
right.
the hack.
So. Okay, so let's just define that.
That's rhythm.
Let's just define the biohacking stuff that you object to, and mm-hmm. then the biohacking stuff where you're like, okay, that's something that I can totally get on board with.
Yeah, so fast track fitness would be one.
Okay.
So just do these really hard intervals, high intensity interval training.
I got you. Okay.
And that'll get you this immense amount of unbelievable experience and suffering, and through suffering you'll get better, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So that's a biohack. Fasting for people who shouldn't be fasting. Mm-hmm. So they'll use preliminary research on chimpanzees or rats and slap that over into a human model to this unfat, uneducated person, overfat, uneducated person, who just sees it as like GH improvements and longevity, yet they're in metabolic disruption.
The magic
pill. It's the worst thing
again.
For them, right? Yeah. Those are 2 examples. Another one that's getting a lot more play, which I'm a little bit concerned about, is psychedelics or nootropics, simply due to the fact that I think 99.8% of most humans don't even have a real great concept of consciousness or reality. And so what they get in that is an extension beyond what they have as a great base of support, and they fall in love with this supra-conscious level, yet they're running from what they don't have as a base support.
100%.
So with people who do have, which I'm saying is a very small amount,
yeah.
right? Very small amount, mm-hmm. have that really great consciousness, who they may actually be leaders amongst us, actually, who could get to that supra-conscious level and share stories about what we should do in a non-drug-dependent state that helps us become more conscious.
Absolutely.
So there's lots of positives to that, but I think there's maybe 30 people that should actually be allowed to do it and then just speak to us in languages, but don't sell those mushrooms to people who don't have a great base of support.
That's
right?
Really cool.
Like they can't. You know, not to braid it, but they can't fucking, you know, navigate in life. And so if you can't navigate in life, this is just an extract of something that you're running away from what you can't navigate, which is what you're responsible for, right? So, and of course, that can get weird and uncomfortable, but that's where I draw the line on that. And I see it being a lot more prevalent. I'm a little concerned about it because
it's crazy right now.
Accepted drug use, basically.
I went to
Austin for PaleoFX, and it was just like, common conversation amongst everybody. Yeah. And it was the first time we ever like heard of it. And it was just everywhere.
Yeah.
I'm with you 100% though on the you don't want to escape anything. Yeah. Right. So like for the people that are playing around with that, I've always thought that if you, like you said, already have that great base and you have that great connection and everything, and then it's like, okay, well, let's see what this does. And I think that plays back to fitness as well, right? Like, you don't want to just jump in and...
Well, how long is it going to last?
How long is what going to last?
Anything that you do that's a hack, you could ask that question.
Yeah,
it's like,
exactly.
Without a base. Is just to help you for 6 months?
Yeah.
No, I really like it. Oh, so you're going to do it forever? Mm-hmm. So what are you hacking? You know, we just believe that, like, all of a sudden... You know, children will be born in like 3 months, not 9 months.
Yeah.
Right? We're laughing at it, but it's like, fuck, if you were cut yourself in 1600, you don't repair yourself faster today than you did in 1600.
Right.
Right? But we believe that we do. You can't, bio and hack can't even be a word. It actually makes no sense. You know, and that's where it squeezes on the side of artificial intelligence and reality. In what that is, and we'll probably get to that point where we're slightly human and slightly non-human, and that's when we can probably have the real conversation on a hack, because that's the truest hack.
Yeah.
Right? Is that we get built up to the system, and you know, we're hacked from intelligence bits and bytes.
And it for sure all comes down to like taking a shortcut again. You know what I mean? Like, how can I biohack my way to this instead of just actually putting in the real work?
For sure. Exercise can be used as I was an adrenaline junkie too. I know what that is like. So exercise can be used as a biohack. People do exercise to get cortisol to get themselves through the day.
Yep.
Cortisol is an anti-inflammatory, high, mental, acute, you know, kind of activity. So if people need to exercise, you know, to like stay vital, that's a problem. But that's a biohack, right? Because eventually you got to say, well, how long will this last? And it ends up in being challenging to the organs over time.
Yep.
Pre-workouts is a biohack. So people can't actually do the task imposed. They need to get to a super level of mental acuity or cell volumization, you know, prior to doing the activity. Again, you got to ask, well, how long is that going to last? And what happens when you really need to have it and you don't have it?
Yeah.
Right? And you're not connected to your thing, you know? Are you going to have less connection? So just lots of examples of it.
What do you think about the red light thing that everyone's going on to right now?
Red light therapy for recovery?
Yeah.
No, not that one.
Okay.
What is that? Like, what is that called again? The red light therapy. It's bothering me right now. There's a name for it.
I don't know, but I've heard of it in rehabilitative assessing. I never heard of it for that. Red light or laser therapy is done
red laser,
for
that's it. That's
awesome. Yeah, for tendon disruption
and
things like that.
No, not that. Yeah.
But we're talking about people changing bulbs into red lights. Have you seen this?
No.
At PaleoFX, it was a huge thing. There was a big booth. People were saying that. They're changing all the lights in their house now to red light because the blue light is,
That's fair.
Is it toxic?
Yeah. Exactly. Especially like being like in an office setting, just like we are right now under like the LED lights like all day.
Yeah.
Changes like melatonin levels and blah and like all this. So
you know that could if it takes an overall stress away from the human, I think that's a little bit different. You're kind of pulling out. And you're taking like shitty carpet out of your home and not bad paint and not using deodorant. You know that those are good. Those are just good basic principles, I think.
I don't think
you're working away from a hack. But, you know, we really need to say, though, just based upon the red light thing, because that can carry over to foods, and you use PaleoFX as an example. I mean, we have these large organizations and movements, and we forget to simply ask the question, like, what happened to humans? Like, why can't we eat some gluten or drink a few beers and not get the shit kicked out of us?
Yeah.
And I think overall humans are less resilient. And we're using all these ideas, what we see, with which people get failures on. And we're like, oh, that's the culprit. Gluten's the culprit. It's like, gluten's not the fucking culprit.
Yeah.
You're
gluten
weaker.
Allergy
and
fucking
no one wants to talk about it.
Wasn't a thing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And now
resistance to antibiotics, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
But I think we need to real look. And that's why we love fitness, right? Because we know fitness creates more robustness in people, right? Mm-hmm. A stronger immune system. And if it's done effectively, it wards off all that shit. We hear all the stories, right? Clients like, oh man, you know, improve my fitness. Now I can go do these things.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. And it's simply because they're more resilient humans.
And you just feel better throughout
the day.
But
we shouldn't pick on the et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, maybe you're just, you know, weaker.
I think it's really cool to draw that line in between, you know, the biohack and just healthy living in general. You know, like changing your light bulbs and stuff actually helps you be better and like take some stressors away.
You're navigating better in this place. That's
for sure. Yeah. I actually want to jump into what you mentioned with the pre-workout and just supplements in general, and then maybe we can go down that rabbit hole a little bit as well,
too.
Yeah, for sure. I stopped taking pre-workout like a long, long time ago. I was taking it in college, and then after that, never again. I've always had insane jitters and then just crashes afterwards. Yeah.
It facilitates an overreaching state.
Yeah, basically. So let's talk about that a little bit. And then every now and then I'll do like a black coffee as a pre-workout. So maybe you can jump into that. If that's a good thing, bad thing, whatever you think.
Yeah, anything that, because I guess coffee would be some more of a stimulant too that takes you out of your normalcy, you know. And I drink coffee. So as an excerpt to that. I used to be, if we're on the topic of supplementation.
Yes, please.
Coming out of university.
Yes, please. Yes,
yeah,
please.
Coming out of university, our only knowledge on what supplementation was being pushed from the bodybuilding industry. You know, so Muscle Media 2000 and Dan Duchesne and Mauro DePasquale, guys that I would follow back in the day. I mean, they were still into hormone use as well, but supplements were like the big thing out there. If you remember T-Nation and the start of, what's his name, Bill and his brother. That started that body transformation way back in the 90s. Anyway, supplements were big then, and when I was first seeing it, I was like, these things are the fucking answer, like HMB and DHEA off the shelf and creatine, and like, holy shit, you get to try this stuff and you do it incorrectly and fucking tried everything. But it's because at the time it was like we were sold, right? Remember, I was a coach in fitness. We were sold on this notion that these are the answers, right? So it basically was almost a fast track back in the day.
Yeah.
And so I got really deep into it to a point where I followed other people who pushed it really heavy too, and started believing in this idea that these supplements will fix, everything, right? And then I got deep into those, the practice of it. I had like at one point I think like. My wife will remember, but like $15,000 worth of inventory in this little closet next to my office.
Yeah.
Right. But I was pushing that shit heavy. So every client that would come through, be doing body composition measurements and nutritional lifestyle and program design, they'd also be leaving with some form of supplements. Right. And then I started recognizing with data like body fat scores, general fitness, et cetera, you get to look at, so many different people making improvements and changes and whatnot. And I saw that for those really that did not do any supplementation or just had, basic shit in order, they were getting just the same results and no different. And even the folks that we like said, this is the answer, these supplements are the answer, they really didn't make massive improvements on general health measures and all those other scores, right? Mm-hmm. So it takes time for you to recognize, you're like, yeah, we're pushing the shit, we have fucking no idea why we're pushing it, right? And that would be everything, I'll give you an idea that it wasn't just, a vitamin mineral supplement here and there, it was everything.
Yeah.
And so then I became super interested in saying, well, what the fuck does work and what is supplementation? So I followed my doctor around, Dr. Jeff Drabot, who I met in 2001. And he's a naturopathic medical doctor. And every couple of weekends, he'd be going traveling the world to these conferences to learn about, what they were giving as their medicine, basically, right? Like, how do you give out these supplements to people? And here's all the research and whatever. And I just followed him around and recognized it was way outside of my scope. And that there's a lot of political innuendos inside of supplementation,
for sure.
Just like there is inside of medicine. They're two of the same areas, really. But a lot of them did have some positivity due to the fact that people didn't have access to great food anymore and soil erosion and changes in the environment, and a lot of fucking people were stressed out, right? So, that would just give you indications right there what you probably could focus on a broad-based support. Something that doesn't necessarily mean to be supplementation, because it could just be breathing, but something that focuses on stress management, something that focuses on micronutrients or the balance of that, and something that focuses on the microflora. Because of those three things that we just see in humans today, yeah. Right? We don't get quality foods, fucking soil changes, accessibility, whatnot, and we probably don't have those quality of foods as we did in their 17,000 different iterations of them. And you probably need to have some support for stress and what the fuck is happening today and so many people trying to keep up with the Joneses. So I learned all that and recognized it was way out of my league, but started, with Dr. Drabot making supplements. So then I got to see the background of making supplements, right? So we had like a liver supplement, adrenal, multivitamin, amino acid, post-workout, et cetera, et cetera. And that was just really cool because you got to see first, cost, margins, et cetera, et cetera. So back full circle, I'll tell you that you need to have a real good analysis and a great assessment with an individual before you want to prescribe anything. That's not just foodstuffs. And so if I would not have told you that 10 years ago, I probably would have said, like, these are the three basics and folks should really be interested in that. But I saw so many iterations now where I was just trying to be smart and trying to look like I knew what I was talking about. And by thinking I was leveling up by because I was offering supplements and using it or taking or giving it to someone.
Yeah.
To the point where I think possibly we could be erring on the side of caution or unsafety by just loosely saying, 4 grams of fish oil a day is going to be a good balance for you. And I've seen so many different human iterations from testing and Dr. Jabot's stuff and some of our coaches that test that, that it really is super individualized.
Yeah.
And if you slightly squeak in the wrong direction, you may be unfolding some things inside, especially when it gets to the adrenal stuff and, you know, working on the cells and anything that's a false energy source. Mm-hmm. You know, even massive amounts of B vitamin or amino acids, for example, that people just loosely throw out. But that could start changing physiology to get you into that overreaching state. So, sorry I don't have, like, the top five you were probably looking for.
Yeah,
but that's what led to my story on it.
I actually like that answer a lot
better. Is that I, you know, more so today, I kind of push it to medicine and say, you probably need to get some really good advice. But this is the fucking ironic thing, is that, well, I guess it's 90% of people could honestly just fucking sleep better or drink water or chew their fucking food, and it would take care of a lot of those problems that they're looking for in a supplementation to fix it. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. So if I was an athlete out there, maybe just even a regular person who doesn't have an OPEX or it's not in your system right now, what are some tests that I can get done at a doctor's office or wherever to test exactly those things that you've mentioned?
Yeah, you may not be able to get a test at a quote-unquote doctor's office.
Okay.
There's functional diagnostics that you can do now. And that can be done online with some people. FDN is a program by Reed Davis that, you know, they coach coaches on what to look for in those basic tests, which would be urine, saliva, blood, and an array of different things. And I would go that route. If there's something they wanted to investigate, the Dutch test or dried urine specimen test is a good one, DUTCH.
Okay.
You could just research that. And we got our practitioners here in Arizona. I'm sure they'd love to hear from folks who are interested in doing the testing on it.
Awesome.
And, you know, just do your research on it. There's I know Chris Kresser has different versions of some testing, too, that he's been advocating to get people into that area of, like, well, what we need to look at, really, that's going to be a good base support. And I enjoy that because at least it's asking a little bit more investigation on what should
awesome.
Be, you know?
I have one that I'm really interested in. A lot of people are getting these home kits that tell you what you're allergic to food-wise, like your, what is it, food
intolerances.
Food allergies.
Yeah.
What do you think of these things?
Yeah, there's still more work to be done on it. You know, what they may be just getting presented in the data is like a food stuff that they've been getting somewhat of an inflammation on for a period of time, or it could also be an immune response based upon their trajectory in time. Like they may have had an overabundance of shitty dairy when they were like 3 to 19 years old, like someone like myself. And so casein and other things are going to come up in my system simply because I eat shit dairy and had way too much of it, you know, for 16 years. So does that fundamentally mean that that's a really shitty thing to stay away from? Well, if I do stay away from it, I actually feel better. So that's some of the things you can extract from it. But just remember that based upon retesting, we've seen that people pull those things out and then they go back to that same test over time and it doesn't show up anymore. So what does that tell you? It tells you that, you know, you got to have the basics, fucking variety in food, go with high quality, and maybe it won't cause a stress to the system. But someone could come in with those tests, be completely anxious, fried, and working their ass off in training, and present with all these inflammatory things, and it's fucking got nothing to do with the food.
Yeah.
It's got to do with them not being able to absorb it and break it down, so everything's a fucking invader. So when you get the test, they're like, Ryan, fucking almonds. Almonds is my problem. That's what's been that's what my problem is. Like, almonds not your problem, man. You know, 4 hours of sleep a night and you're a junkie for fitness and 6 cups of coffee today, that's your problem.
And calming down the nervous system and all those things.
But there is some good tests. MRT is a mediated response test that you can do. So they're getting better with those. They're looking at, like, just call it a deeper level of understanding as to what's happening with your, you know, nervous system and food stuffs and how they kind of interact. So I wouldn't disregard it. They're getting stronger.
When you think about the adrenal test where you put the saliva,
Yeah, the Dutch test is the best one for that now, because that's a dried urine specimen for 24 hours. Mm-hmm. So it not only gives you an indication as to what's happening with those hormones that are important to look at, but it also looks over a big period of time, and it looks at different metabolites of each of those hormones.
Oh, wow.
So not only what you're producing at a specific amount, which the old saliva test would do, the 4 points during the day, there's just upgraded versions of that now that would give you a little bit more information.
Okay, Dutch test, I remember that one.
Yeah, awesome. For sure.
Since we're on the food topic now as well, and you mentioned this, we had Mike in here earlier. He mentioned it. I saw a couple of your athletes actually post about this way earlier. It's the whole chewing thing.
Yeah.
You guys are big on that. So
yeah.
Go into that a little bit, if you don't mind, and just what the chewing, your food actually can do for you.
Yeah, well, it's actually...
The biohack.
Yeah, it actually... it's like Matthew Walker's interview on Joe Rogan, you know, a couple of weeks ago. People were like, you hear about this fucking sleeping thing, man? You fucking sleep 8 hours, you're gonna live longer, you'll feel good. I was like, that fucking blows my mind that we're talking about that.
Yeah.
It's the same thing for chewing.
Right, totally. It's, yeah, like, it's so simple.
You know? It's just one of those things that just, you know, we float by, you know, we just keep, you know, forgetting that it's not, obviously it's not like just the chewing, right? There's so many things around that. Number one, to try to get into a parasympathetic state when you're trying to break down foods, right? So, you know, if it can't be a visual, but if you're, you know, putting food stuff in and like inside you're like this,
yeah,
right? From something that just happened or shit you got to do or fucking stuff you're flipping through on
or you
Instagram.
Have to leave in 5 minutes or.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're not digesting that food well. Now, of course, with that statement, people are like, well, how the fuck do you know? What are you measuring that can dictate you're not, you know? And I don't have that. So it's, you know, why chew? Well, why not? That's really the thing that you should be looking at.
Yeah.
And if your argument is, well, I'll, you know, get things done quicker and et cetera, et cetera. Most case, you're going to end up with those kind of those inflammatory food results. You're not going to be digesting your food well. Your system is working harder to break the food down. Mm-hmm. But we know all the positives of it. You know, the smell starts activating shit in your body that can help in digestion. When you're chewing your food and breaking it down to small pieces, digestion starts in your mouth. Mm-hmm. So it starts to surround it with shit that's going to help break it down. It gets through your system. You want to pull out all those great nutrients that you're spending all that fucking money on, right, for good food. You want to enjoy it. And so we just say simple things like, you know, put your fork down, have conversation during meals, chew your food quite a bit. And we think that's one of the big, you know, things that we can impact folks with because it creates a more consciousness around breaking their foods down.
And so simple, too. I mean,
it
like
is.
Everybody can do
so
that.
It yeah, it's a little challenging at first. And my question would be, you know, what's the hurry again? So
yep.
People are like, well, I don't have time, you know, to break down food as well. You don't have time to get better, you know.
That's a good point.
Or live longer.
How many chews or how long are we talking about for a mouthful?
Yeah, we just use a terminology like 32 chew because people will remember it, right? But is there something different between 31 and 32? No, it's not.
Yeah.
You know, you just need to break, because, I mean, think about a strawberry, right? You're not going to chew a strawberry 32 times, but you want to get to the point where you're breaking it down so that your body is having a really easy time of absorbing it.
Okay.
And then so you can think in your mind, right, just think about foodstuffs like, you know, fucking trees and nuts, which people are could be big on a big raw diet kick.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's going to end up in having a big gut rot or an issue with your immune system and your digestive tract because that's really hard to break down.
Anything raw.
So if you do have that, yeah, well, if you do eat anything raw, you have to chew that shit really well.
Okay.
Really well, which is possible. But I would say if you're not getting those nuts or seeds, for example, down to like a butter, if you're not breaking those trees down, i.e. like raw kale, really
yeah.
effectively,
mm-hmm.
that stuff's coming out through your ass. It is.
Love it.
And you're probably not going to be using all that beneficial things that are inside of it.
Definitely. Yeah, I think that's cool.
Wow.
That's
something
cool.
to think about.
What do you think about juicing then when people, because I know when you juice something,
mm-hmm.
it does change like the glycemic index of it. Like it does change
yeah.
like the, you know, everything about it. Like, so what do you think about something like that?
Yeah, well, I won't sound like a hypocrite in that I used a lot of different kinds of juices for people when I started giving them exercise prescriptions because they didn't fundamentally have the time to sit down for 90 minutes at their morning time for breakfast. And so they would blend up, you know, fats, ground flax, dark berries, whey protein,
vegetables.
And maybe a couple of other things. And I would get them to, like, sip it but chew it as they did it, right? And I actually got okay results from that. Sometimes, too, I want to caveat is that I was replacing a shit breakfast,
mm-hmm.
right? So I don't want to sound like that was the answer. But And I also just wanted to point out that I did prescribe it a lot. And juicing can mean multiple different things, right? But I would assume that if you're going to blend that stuff up and it's at a good temperature and you're still chewing as you're basically absorbing it, I can see it being beneficial, all the while recognizing what's the big picture, right? If someone's juicing because they think it's like going to save them from cancer, or if they're juicing because they want to lose weight, then obviously, you know, juicing may be okay, but you're probably doing it for the wrong reasons. But I think as an excerpt in someone's dietary profile, I think it may be okay as long as we stick to the side of, you know, real high nutrient density and low sugar.
It's just not the same as chewing, though, right? I mean, like,
No.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. So good question. I would still get people to, like, squish it around in their mouth and still create some, you know, and even some companies have done that with supplements where they put, like, little bits of food inside of their supplements and post-workout supplement, which is a good idea because it makes people chew. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, wow, that's a good idea.
Yeah.
I'm going to hit a super cool segue right now. I'm going to go from juicing to juicing.
Oh, yeah.
So in the fitness realm, especially in the CrossFit realm, I mean, taking steroids has been such a huge topic. And then we had Ricky Gerrard after the games last year with the whole SARMS incident. And
yeah, that's too bad.
And yeah, and a lot of people are just...
I was cheering for him.
Yeah, I know. He's a cool guy.
I like him.
Yeah, me too.
Definitely. No, actually, I met him in GRID. And I don't know the history of, you know, what he was doing at that time, but I thought he was quite special in GRID, you know, and then see him get into CrossFit and do well was kind of exciting.
I still don't think he deserved, like, all that negative press just from SARMs. There's people doing way worse things than that, in my opinion, but go ahead, finish up.
Yeah, and that's basically the question I was going to ask is there's a lot of people, especially outside of CrossFit, that are like, oh, they're all on the gas, they're all on the juice. Like, everybody is using, everybody is this, right?
Yeah.
What is your, I mean, you've worked with a lot of athletes, and obviously you don't have to mention any names, but what has been your experience with that?
Yeah, I think we'd be naive to say that any sport is not going to be, you know, sport is folly, right? So just really think about what are people getting out of sport, you know? Just ask that fundamental question, and then, you know, if you can't cheat, it's probably not a sport.
Yeah.
And that kind of sounds weird coming from myself, but being that sport is folly and sport is entertainment. Mm-hmm. So we can't be so naive to think that people are not going to try whatever they can to raise maximal physical potential.
Especially when
and if that stuff is accessible, right? If that stuff's accessible, mm-hmm. like Coke was in 1910 for cyclists, or heroin, you know, which was accessible, or nicotine, or you know, IV methods of putting shit in your body to climb up mountains, people are going to try what they can within those realms to make it happen. So I think we just have to recognize and not be so naive to think, you know, that there's a special sport out there that's not going to have that involved in it, right?
For sure.
First and foremost. Because then it doesn't, like, make it, you know, we're not classifying what is right and what is wrong because it's not really a moral thing in my question. I think it's an individualism thing. Mm-hmm. But if you, you know, if you want to do that, you got to pay the price. And, you know, we can't be dumb to think that it's not happening. That's just the way it goes. It's always unfortunate. And I think, to be honest about the system too, CrossFit, I think they're doing the best job they can, right? But I do think it's unfortunate of the outsider's perspective on how hard the athletes work. Mm-hmm. I tried to be vocal somewhat, shape or form online, but you just get into, like, YouTube is just fucking madness, is chaos to kind of get into that. But I think it's really unfortunate that there's that, what you said, that slap tone on top of everyone being like that, and they all must be that.
Exactly.
And those are generally coming from people who are weak and have never really done anything.
Yeah.
Really, no, to be completely honest. Anyone who's really done anything or worked their ass off is probably not going to be the first person that speaks up and makes those comments. So they're either trying to get a play in the market or trying to sound popular or just, like, stick it to someone to get some vibes happening. Most times, you know, take this the right way, they're not smart enough to do it. Secondly, it's costly. And then third, you know, there's really not, from my perspective anyways, from what I know about physiology and that usage, it's not fundamentally going to be a massive difference in work capacity long term.
Okay.
That's probably a long story to get how that happens, but when you change, you know, hormones inside and you have a new chassis, the new chassis takes a long time to develop all of the neural inputs and cell usage and ATP usage at each cell, et cetera, et cetera. That takes a long time to develop. Like, I'm talking years and years and years to develop. Mm-hmm. So unless someone, like, creates that exogenous hormone usage for 8 years, right? And then, quote unquote, goes clean. And then 2 years later starts to participate in the sport. That's a possibility where you may get some, you know, actual great results for their max potential.
Yeah.
But if you're just inside the system and you're probably using it because you're not reaching your max potential or you're something you're missing, quote unquote, then it just, you know, it's, you're going to suffer because your body has to work in coordination with what you're giving it naturally from the tasks that are in front of you.
Which is when injuries happen.
What's that?
Which is usually when injuries happen.
Of course. Yeah. Because you're working outside of your means, right? Yeah. Your brain is, your body is like, I have this. And your brain's like, you can't do that. But your body's like, oh, yes, you can.
Yeah.
Because it gives feedback loops that are different, right? So you can just imagine how many repetitions, especially within the sport, is required to, like, learn all that stuff. Which you guys know, it takes a lot of reps to get good at that, right?
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
And so I really don't think that fundamentally is probably helping. In indirect ways, you know, just basic principles, it would help recovery tremendously.
I was going to say, that's usually like every professional athlete's first thing is like, I didn't use it to get better. I used it for recovery. I go to, I have 100 baseball games a year. Or
yes.
This or that.
Yes. So there's no doubt it would help with recovery, except it's not studied enough. And this is where, again, I would say that it's probably, it may help in recovery, but I think the downside of what it's doing for the lack of connection to your metabolic output is probably not worth it.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like, so you're going to recover better, but you're also going to be building a better chassis. That takes a really long time
to get used to.
So I just don't, we don't know enough, you know, we don't know enough yet. There's probably some like supplements off the shelf that are actually doing some of those things, mm-hmm. right? That are making some great improvements. So it may take us a long period of time where we say we got this 5-year study on mixed modal fitness and this is what the supplementation regime was and this is what we saw in the output, and it could come back to just milk, you know, chocolate milk or something.
Yeah, that'd be great. Now, for someone like me, who I'm not competing, I'm not in any sport, I'm not getting tested, I'm not doing anything.
Mm-hmm.
I just like to work out and I want to look good, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we were talking to Mike about this too, kind of like the, if you look at the graph and you kind of got longevity and you kind of got fitness over here and they overcross at one point. Do you think if done correctly, there's any benefit for the average Joe to be on steroids?
Yeah, if because I've seen it in a medical state. It's not mm-hmm. that I prescribed it, but you end up having people fall in front of you who fall into that category, just what you'd prescribed or described. And in most cases, those individuals have gotten there for unfortunate reasons.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I'll give you some examples of, you know, a human that goes to war that at fundamentally at 21 years of age shouldn't see things for a couple of years or do things for a couple of years that they're really not capable for their prefrontal cortex of handling, okay? And I'll just keep that loose for an idea, but a lot of those young men come out in a hypogonadal state based upon them trying to derive.
What does that mean exactly?
The shit's just not working effectively.
Okay.
Okay, and it's not because they had to be so resilient to put up with what was going on. They had to continue to recover and rebuild all the time way too frequently.
Mm-hmm.
So when you get put back into a regular situation, you just don't have the pieces to, like, function, right? So you're 29, right, and you can't get an erection, and your vitality is low, your mental acuity is off, and you're slightly depressed. Yeah, you know, fishing for your own salmon and living in the woods is not going to help that.
Uh-huh.
It possibly could, but it's not going to help it. So there is advances in science. It, you know, you use the word steroids, but let's just call it like vitamins and minerals and amino acids.
Okay.
Right, because that's basically just what it is, just different forms of it. We just create different namings of it. But it's just supplementation to basically get those people back to like functioning.
Yeah, back to baseline.
Back to baseline.
Mm-hmm.
Let's take another situation. So you may have an American football player, right, who's made a great career, who still has the pieces working upstairs, and has got money in the bank, and is 10 years finished to 34 years of age, and I can fucking guarantee you he's not, like, running around with his kids in 3 years, right? So, you know, who are we to decide what kind of things that are available for medicine that's going to help that person? So I can give you – and then there's more and more examples of that.
Mm-hmm.
But you got to come back to the point. It's like, how did you get there? That's why I say with unfortunate means, right? So if you come in at 32, you're like, I'm over fat, I'm fucking stressed out, et cetera, et cetera. I want this to get more fit. You probably don't need that.
Yeah.
What you do need is to get your shit together to recognize the base support that's required to build up, right? And if you're like fit, resilient, young, and you just want to do that shit, I would hope you're doing it for money or professional means.
Yeah.
Right. And then all the fucking power to you, man. You're just going to need some medical advice over time to make sure that you're managing those things. I see it as a different light now. As I was 18, it was like, oh, that's bad shit. At 26, you know, looking at anti-aging back at the time or traveling around with my doctor and seeing what people were doing like in a medical profession, they were helping fucking thousands of people. Like I'm talking like giving them new lives.
Yeah.
So who the fuck are we to decide and classify steroids in that arena when it's like 1/50th of the total amount that a bodybuilder was using? Mm-hmm. Yet it improved this person's life forever? Like, I don't know. You can see there's a place for everything then inside 100%. Of it. So then there's a slight gray area. Back to your point is like, well, where does that area lie? And it's gray. It's not black and white. But there is circumstances where it's very beneficial, obviously in a medically supported situation. But, you know, unfortunately, in most cases, it's a default method.
That's an awesome answer, man. Thank you. Mm-hmm. I like that.
I also like that he kind of pointed out that by taking it, it's not going to create an athlete that isn't already on that path of becoming super great. Like, it's not – I think a lot of people really underestimate that. They're just like, oh, like – he's on steroids. That's why he's.
Yeah.
That's why Matt Frazier.
Yeah, and we need to criticize those people, is what I'm saying. We need to criticize those bad ideas, and you're fraudulent if you're not criticizing those bad ideas, because we believe in hard work that gets people to high performance.
Yeah.
And so we need to speak up and like berate that. Like you can't allow people just to have that conversation. Number one, we don't fucking care about what Matt Frazier thinks about that. He's probably strong enough to not give a shit. But we care about it in terms of the integrity of what we hold true, which is hard work. And so I really think that's unfair, which is your point. I think it's unfair that people could slap that on top of an unknown new sport.
Yeah.
Right? Especially with the females, right? Like they get hit a lot, and I'm far more empathetic, you know.
Yeah.
A lot of males can possibly take it, but for females, that's...
Take all the meaning and respect basically out of the hard work.
Exactly. They don't know how many hours they need. You know, you don't see the background stuff that people put in, right?
What is it exactly about females and their, you know, genetic makeup that lets them create more muscle mass and faster, I think, than men? I think it's actually been studied, right? Like their cross-sectional muscle fiber area is just it's better than ours.
Same in the lower body, but different, you know, like makeup. You just got to go back to evolutionary means of the differences, right? And hopefully we're not going to get into that unsafe territory of conversation. But but I think it's that females generally have a lower neuromuscular efficiency because it's a neuroendocrine response, right, in fitness. So whatever contractions you do, you know, your chassis, as I described it, is different, right? I mean, there could be some little gray areas in between there, but most cases, females have a lot less testosterone, right? So anabolic drive is led by neural drive. And so when they do all of these moderate weight, high repetition, high volume activity, I think it does give them a growth hormone response that's higher than what you're going to get in a male. Because a male has a higher propensity to burning out due to the neuroendocrine response every time we do contractions. That's simply a penis and vagina thing. That's just different. And so you can just see it with practice as well, which I think leads to that larger increase in lean mass. I think there's a lot of other factors that go into that as well. Secondarily, one area that I have philosophically on it is that when, you know, these females have a burning desire to get better at what they're participating in, and like you can see with young gymnasts or like hockey players in their lower body, you know, you will morph into what's required in the sport, right? So if you come into the sport and you don't have that carriage in the upper body, you will do whatever is fucking necessary to morph into Jack Traps and a big scap and Terrace Minor that's now the size of a fist, because you have to maintain all the contractions that are within that sport. So there's something about that too, that the brain says, okay, I have to be able to do that. I need to grow and create that size in order to do it. So I think there's a physiological representation that causes that. And I also think there's an emotional thing that they know they need to be able to do in order to be able to, and if you get that plus a cultural thing, which is what's happening with the Icelandic girls, you get a fucking juggernaut.
Yeah.
Right? That's a juggernaut.
Definitely.
Which I think is I have an interesting, you know, thought process on that. Culturally, they really changed, let's just call it gender equity in regards to politics and business way back in the 90s. There was a big upheaval in terms of what was, you know, perspective over there. And so they created these massive changes in really what was happening in culture for the differences in the gender. And so if you just formulate an idea on that, you know, those are moms now that are breeding. You can see where I'm going with this,
yep,
right?
Totally.
Because when you watch those girls participate, you know, there's something different in their eyes than I see from a number of other females that I work with. You can see it in the odd person, you know, every now and then, but they have something deep in their bones, like deep cultural, you know, stuff that I think just makes them rise up amongst others. And I think it may have been some of those cultural shifts back in the 90s that
such
really
a cool
makes
theory.
A big impact on that. Because we forget about that. Because you can ask the question, like, you know, of course we need like 30 or 40 years of it. But, you know, you didn't have to look too far to recognize that Rich Froning, where he was from and what was being happening down there. There's something different about that,
yep.
Right? I don't want to like get into what it is, or maybe I can't even put my hand on it.
Right.
But there's something different.
It's like the grunt work factor.
It is
almost.
Like, right. We even got to be careful of what we're calling it.
Yeah,
right.
Right.
But I'm telling you, there's something different about that. And it'll take us a long while to kind of see it back to back, but there's probably some pieces within Matt and Rich that we could extract and go, that's interesting. It's just that with the Icelandic girls, we're seeing it like in a small little area. And we're just so robust over here on this side. Maybe we're not seeing it, but
I love
very
the theory because it's such a, it's like almost like a third approach. Like people always talk about just your body and what you're physically able to do. Then you got like people that are saying, oh, it's just in your DNA. Like, you know what I mean? Like he was born like this.
Yeah.
He's just strong. And now I like this. It's like the third one where it's like it's the cultural response to whatever you were brought up to do.
Yeah.
That's like so deeply rooted inside
yeah, like,
of you that it comes out in those stress situations.
Like how do you deal with losing?
Yeah.
Right? And we know with champions, they fucking hate that. Right? They
in
hate
anything,
it.
In anything.
They love play, right? And mm-hmm. and finding solutions to movements. Right, and they'll just play all the time, and it looks like metcons and intervals and shit, but it's really just play, and they can find solutions to movement better than other people, but they hate losing, mm-hmm. and they may not present that in a podcast or tell people about it, but it's a burning desire inside, or that like what we consider heart of a lion, or you know that kind of thing that it's really hard to touch and grasp.
Yeah,
and I'm sure if you guys spoke to them, you can kind of get a little piece of it.
100%.
If you poke them enough, you'll
yeah, it'll come
you know,
out.
It
the
does.
Bear will come
it
out.
Does. Yeah.
Yeah,
and that's admirable.
Absolutely,
you know, because I think we all would like to have a piece of that in us sometimes, and
oh, yeah,
maybe we
sure.
see it in a work at every now and then, and we're like, yeah, good job.
It's so hard to teach too, and it just comes.
It is.
It just comes out.
It is. So back to your point, you know, maybe understanding that it could be a little bit of a cultural thing could be a good understanding.
Yeah,
and it can lead us into practices of how do we develop that in other people.
And I think that brings us full circle again too, you talking about having a relationship with your athlete and mm-hmm. knowing those little things about their background to maybe be able to like push those buttons.
Yeah,
in the right setting.
Yeah, because if you figure out their why, you'll recognize that a lot of people are not doing it to get to the games. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a lot of deeper pieces underneath it. And then just the journey in fitness becomes something that's just quite special then when they figure out why they're doing it.
Absolutely, yeah.
You want to do like a 10-minute just random questions?
Okay, like a little just shoot the shit?
Yeah.
Okay.
You could just like.
I was going to say, usually it's like three questions that take place in 90 seconds, but 10 minutes are random.
Oh, no, it doesn't have to be 10 minutes.
No, it doesn't have to
water
be 10 minutes.
Here.
We'll do something. Yeah.
We could be done in 3 minutes. I don't know. It depends how many things. I'll say something, and then you can say something. We'll go back
yeah.
and forth.
And you don't have to like go into depth on these answers at all. Like,
okay.
It could just
yeah,
be something
just
super,
be super short.
I got it. Thank
super
you.
Shallow. Yeah.
Yeah.
I've always wanted to know.
I know what's coming. I'm so excited.
Let's say the CrossFit Games are tomorrow. Should I have sex with my girlfriend before? Or
the morning of, or the
morning of, or like, should we not do it for a whole week or a whole month? Because I know back in the day in the Olympics, like they didn't do it for like a year
yeah.
going into it,
yeah,
like
yeah.
just crazy things.
Yeah, I'd
like
say
just
do
debunk
it.
That.
I'd say do it. Do it a couple times. It's you know, and it's probably an assessment outside of a dampening, but I do really think physiologically that there's different humans that partake in our sport, and the whole you know. You stimulated you theory and you know power potential and work capacity. That's all different in our sport, and so we have to think like you know the model in the sport is different than any model that's been done.
Mm-hmm.
So any white paper evidence or you know it's like oh they didn't have sex for a year before they yeah but what was their sport? Oh, lifting a weight. It's a little different, you know. So I'm not saying it's massively different, but the organism that goes into that competition, I would believe, needs to be as dampened as possible. You can't be as excited. You need to be dampened.
Right. Calm.
Yeah. So, well, dampened in multiple different ways. So your nervous system needs to be in a great state. You can't be jazzed up.
I can see your face right now.
You can't be jazzed up. So, I mean, not that we have lots of evidence on it, but I would say do it a couple times.
I like
it. In the porta potty now.
Yeah, exactly.
I got to go back to regionals again just so I can try it.
Right before. All right, I got one. How about smoking weed? There's a lot of, like, big athletes. We were talking about Usain Bolt yesterday, Michael Phelps, that, you know, have been known to smoke weed and are great, especially, like, aerobic capacity as well. Do you have any experience with that?
I don't have enough experience to say personally what it would have an effect on, like, my own performance.
Yeah.
And just college age, playing around with hash oil or just experimenting with marijuana as a young kid to kind of, oh, that's kind of interesting. But I never really got it in, you know, in practice to say, oh, this is what could affect. Notwithstanding, there's been, I guess, some pros and cons to it in usage for people in fitness. And some of the cons would be that it becomes a dependent thing for individuals. So they're using it as a dependency to create a parasympathetic environment or calming down effect or, you know, whatnot. And again, it goes back to my same conversation, is that if you don't have the base support for it, I really don't think using it is going to create massive increases in aerobic capacity or changes in that. I would argue the fact that if anyone's using it and they make that statement, they were already elite at a certain level, and they're basically just using it for different reasons because, you know, of whatever it takes. But it's not resulting in an increase in performance because they are using it, if that makes sense.
Totally. Fair enough.
I hear people say all the time, like, you're going to trash your nervous system, like, if you do, like, a 100 max deadlift, which is true. But
well, that depends upon training age.
I was going to say, so when people are throwing this term around, like, your CNS is shot or this or that, can we, like, let's say I did trash it. How would I trash it? How would I not trash it, depending on my age? And then, like, if I did, how long would it take me to recover?
Yeah, so in simple terms, the closer you get to your maximal physical potential, which means, you know, a lot of years of training, then the higher opportunity you have to reach that maximum threshold as to what you're talking about. So let's just take, you know, 20 years of practice. You're in a good state of health, right? And you're doing a strength training program and you build to a max. You may take weeks and possibly months to recover from that max in what you just described in that deadlift. But we got to realize that it's not a trashing, right? It's just it's a stress that you emotionally have had to overcome. Because the limitations in someone doing that max at that point is not like new knee sleeves and a better wrist strap, right?
Yeah.
It's fucking smelling salts and a kick in the balls or a slap on the traps, which means that your central nervous system is the limiter in you lifting that weight after 20 years of experience. So if you overcome that, you need to take a big fucking break from it. So let's go back through every iteration backwards of that, right? If you're 1 year into training, there's no such thing as trashing your nervous system because you can't even express maximal expression of the nervous system. So where people say they feel trashed, it could be just, you know, hearsay or just drama, basically. And the greatest indication is when can you go back and do it again? And your brain will always tell you that. So if they're like, oh, I'm trashed, but the next day you're like, oh, fuck, let's try this again. They do it again. They're probably seen as probably wasn't trashed.
Yeah.
Because you will have indications of not being able to do it no matter what, or it'll create injury. We're not saying people should be stupid enough to get that. But so training age dictates, you know, where people can get on their maximal potential. And in most cases, we throw that word around. I know where your question's coming from. It's thrown around way too much, and it's generally due to probably drama and people making folks want to think that they're really working hard. But unless they're measuring it, you know, then it's probably going to be a false sense.
Yeah. Whatever happened to the Olympic team or like the Team USA that you were putting together? Is that still a thing?
Yeah, the IF3.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a real thing. We have a goal of putting functional fitness in the Olympics for 2028 as being our big goal.
Okay.
When it's in LA, and it's known that LA is going to be hosting. That's still almost 100% in line. But, yeah, we have a long-term vision of having some governance around the sport. More importantly, in recognition of the athlete and the coach, allowing people to recognize that this could be something that you can grow up to do and want to become as an amateur level or do it full time, you know, you know, grow it to a sport that becomes well respected and people look from the outside in and go, wow, you know, that's fascinating. And what do I do to get involved either as a coach or an athlete or a spectator? And it's well understood and people know what it entails. We want to build that. So we're, you know, heavily involved in that. IF3 is a name. We now have 53 countries that are interested, 17 that are designated.
Wow, cool.
And we have to get to around 40 to get to the table with the IOC to be respected for sport governance and start creating.
2028,
Our world championships.
That sounds exciting.
Our world championships are the first event is way too long too. It doesn't have a yoke and running.
Oh, dude! longer the event, the better. I swear.
We have the world championships in London in October, and we're pretty excited to bring out a bunch of new things and have countries represented. And looking to build it. Pretty damn excited about that, so thanks for asking.
That's
awesome.
I'm super excited about that. I remember I emailed you about that, and I wanted to come out, but it was literally like I had to buy the ticket in like that day, and I was like, oh, I just can't pull it off.
Yeah. You would have been good to have in that one, actually. Go up against Alex Smith, see how you held up on those gymnastic pieces.
Oh, yeah, that would have been cool.
Would have been a nice show.
Great.
I love me some gymnastics.
You like some challenge. Yeah. You like.
That's dude.
Love being a pain.
He's got a switch, dude. It's so funny. Like whenever
I
work out together.
I was just joking with Alex Smith, and he was like, "Yeah,
yeah,
yeah, I could do that."
Whenever we work out together,
wasn't a joke, Ryan.
I do my best to like keep up with him, and then every now and then, if the workout allows, I'm actually able to keep up with him for a certain amount of time, and then all of a sudden, he just sees that I'm still there. And something just switches, and he's gone. And every time I'm
just like,
fuck,
to lose.
Dude, almost had him. Yeah.
My biggest thing is my knee. I've had, it's like bone on bone. So it just kind of screws me these days. But
dealing with an athlete is going through that now. Get some patterns.
Nichols?
Oh, no, Jake Berman. Mm. Yeah, great young athlete, good potential. Just some mechanical stuff that's needs to be fixed.
Hiking at 95 fish.
I'll for sure be doing that.
Yeah, good for you, man.
All right, I'm all set. How are you?
Yeah, I'm stoked. That was a great episode.
All right, cool. Jay Fitz, where can anybody find you?
OpexFit.com.
Yep, cool.
Yeah, and Jay Fitz Opex.
Love it.
Instagram and James Fitzgerald Facebook.
All right.
Dude, thanks so much for taking time out of your day.
Yeah.
Love
it. It was great questions. Thanks for having me.
We came all the way out here just for you, basically, so I hope you like that.
Awesome. I did. It was fun.
Thanks, buddy.
Yep.
And that will wrap it up. Thank you so much for tuning in. We guys love having you here. We all have such a blast recording these episodes, so hopefully you guys have just as much fun listening to them, and we also have a lot of fun connecting with you guys. So go ahead and hit us up on Instagram, either at CrossFit Chalk, at YSView for me, at Ryan Fish for Ryan, or just at Shrug Collective. Slide into those DMs. Let us know what you guys think, what you guys like, what you guys hate, maybe some topics you want us to talk about. Even if you just have follow-up questions for us or the guests on the show, we're always going to be more than happy to answer those. Remember our ad sounds terrible. Our little drift from the beginning of the show with Unbroken Designs. We love their stuff. Everybody at Chalk wears their weight vests and the belts, knee sleeves, everything that they have is super legit and fancy schmancy. So head over to unbrokendesigns.com. Use code SHRUG10 for 10% off everything on the side. And we'll see you guys here next week.